your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
Hi everyone, welcome to a special presentation with Mike and Ethan, or
Elf will not be seen tonight.
It is winter. Depending on where you live, it may not look like winter. Here in California, it almost never does, but we've been lucky enough to have some rain lately.
We actually just had some hail here today.
Hail? Whoa.
Highly unusual.
Oh my god. When you were a kid, did you ever go out to play in the hail?
No, I did not.
I did. I once built a hail man in the backyard.
Did it work?
It was very small. It was the size of a baby, and it was wearing a pair of giant novelty sunglasses I had gotten at the fair that year. But it was a hail man.
Well, all hail the hail man.
What the hell do we care, Bill? But
yeah. But yeah, so usually winter here in California is just kind of dark and dreary, but no snow.
No snow.
And that kind of ties in with the thing that we watched for today's episode, actually.
That's correct. I mean, it's not that California never gets snow, but it's just that we drink it all.
Yeah. I mean, mountains have some snow, in theory. So they used to.
Hopefully.
I mean, we're still in that 20-year drought that
they're starting to say every year. Like, maybe it's not a drought. Maybe this is just how California is.
Yeah. I mean, eventually it's kind of like makes you think, because they've been saying it's been a drought since I moved to this state. They're always like, oh, it's a drought this year. Oh, okay. You mean like every year? Sure. Okay. Maybe you should do something to like change the behavior of the state to like take that into account. No, let's not do that.
Anyway. No, everyone wants to have green lawns 100 yards wide.
Stupid.
Zero escape.
Stupid.
What's
suburbia.
That? Flood irrigation. Almonds. I'm sorry.
Oh,
almonds.
Yeah. They're big up here. Almonds. That's right. You say it right, boy.
Yeah. They're almonds in your hand, but almonds on the tree. Which is...
Yeah, because... they're the other way around.
The almonds will get offended.
No, it's almonds on the tree, almonds in your hand. Because when you get them out of the tree, you shake the L out of them.
Oh!
Well, that's a little local color for you kids out there. So if you're ever up in the North State, you can sound like a local. but anyway, let's move on to more important things, which is... Did we say the name of the thing?
No, the name of our show tonight is The Gift of Winter. This is not based on a comic strip. But it is based on something we've looked on before. Actually, no, the thing we looked at before is based on this.
Yes, this is the prequel to Witch's Night Out, except it's not a prequel because it was technically made first. So Witch's Night Out is the sequel to this.
I guess it's the predecessor to Witch's Night Out.
Though. Yes. Yes. And it is. So I, of course, had grown up with Witch's Night Out. I'd seen it many times on television for Halloween. I had never seen this one. And I don't think I'd even heard of it before you mentioned it to me last time we spoke.
I had never watched it until the first time I watched it. It was because I found a super cheap DVD of it at Dollar Tree.
Hmm. And did you know who, when you looked at it, did you recognize the characters? Do you know who they were?
Yes, I did. And the reason for that was because the first time I saw it was at a, video rental place way back in the 90s. And I was like, hey, it's the characters from Witch's Night Out. But I never ended up renting it. And then the place went out of business. So when I finally saw it, I was like, this looks really ugly. Oh, I know this. So I had to run back and look, and I was like, I see where they saw some weaknesses they had to patch up.
Yeah, this is, I think we mentioned this is kind of a dry run for Witch's Night Out. It's definitely, the animation is a lot jankier.
Yes.
It's everything's very pencil sketchy. It looks like when you go to like Spike and Mike's and you see the films that are just like, you know, obviously like student projects that never got finished.
Yeah, this feels like it's not done yet, which is not a strike against it. It feels like you're seeing how the sausage gets made. You know, one of the biggest parts of that is the fact that they didn't add a sound effects track.
Oh yeah, that is so weird.
Isn't that weird? Yeah, instead of a sound effects track, you simply have somebody saying what sound should be there. So doors literally go slam.
I mean, it's a very clever workaround. You got to give them credit for that.
I'm very strongly reminded of, again, way back in the 90s when I would use ResEdit. You know what that is?
No, what's that?
That was a tool that came with the 90s era Macs that lets you pretty much dive into all of your existing apps and change them. It was like a game genie for your computer. And sometimes I would use it to look at games that I had downloaded downloaded isn't even the word. We didn't have the internet then. Games that had been passed to me on a floppy disk.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Damn, to be young.
And there was one that was a kind of a fun, I don't remember what it was called now, but it was kind of like Elevator Action, if you remember that game, like a side-scrolling version of Elevator Action.
And right, right.
It was black and white and totally silent. So one day, just messing around with ResEdit, I opened it up and found it actually included sound files. And the sound files were just the creator going, bang, bang, ha, yes!
Well, you know, I mean, again, better than nothing.
Uh-huh.
They do that in this. And it's, I mean, it actually, I didn't notice for most of this film until the very end that was a thing. Because for most of it, I just kind of assumed that the characters were saying stuff.
Yeah.
There's a long sequence where characters are walking and they're all just going, trudge, tramp, trudge, tramp, trudge, tramp, trudge,
tramp, trudge, trudge, trudge.
Yeah, tramp. And I just thought like, oh, they're just, that's like a song that they're singing as they're marching to keep their spirits up, you know, like a sea shanty to keep them all in step. And I didn't realize till later on when they're going slam that I was like, oh, okay. I guess it's just, they didn't have any sound effects. I don't think there's any music in this either because we don't get a nice song like in Witch's Night Out about Halloween or anything.
At least there isn't a sung song. There's kind of a recited song at the end, but the music is all kind of just tinkly needle drop for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, you know, like if you were to show this to children, I think they'd be like, what is this? This is cheap crap. This might be too janky even for a child to really enjoy. But, I thought that putting that aside, there's a lot in this that I really enjoyed.
Yes.
I really thought was very clever, very original. And I would be hard pressed to say whether I enjoyed this or Witch's Night Out more.
Really? Wow. I definitely feel that Witch's Night Out is the better thing overall. But yeah, this has a lot to recommend it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like we said, this one is a little more, a lot more jerry-rigged. I think the thing is, Witch's Night Out is probably better, but it's a more conventional plot. And I use that in the loosest possible way because Witch's Night Out is already very weird.
Yeah, it doesn't have. Yeah. Have you seen anything else with that plot?
I mean, not really, not because it's like Witch's Night Out has a few thing elements that I'm like, okay, I have seen, you know, a witch who wants to like be friendly, and I've seen like kids turning into monsters and then realize being sad about it. And I've seen, you know, and I've seen people like getting hold of magical items and causing unintentional havoc. Like all those elements I've seen in other things, I've never seen them all together in one thing like that. Like Witch's Night Out, they were like, we only have one chance to make a Halloween special. We're going to put everything in it.
Dump it all in. Yeah.
And it works surprisingly well, especially considering it's what, 20 minutes long. Yeah. I mean, they 22? Not a yeah. wasted second. 22. Yeah. This one, is not quite, it's not quite as jam packed with stuff. But
it has some really nice quiet moments I've noticed.
Yeah. And in this one, I have to say like, a lot. This one, I'm just like, okay, I don't know what was this one. I mean, I don't know what to compare it to. A little bit Phantom Tollbooth-y, I guess, in some ways.
When I recommended it to you, I suggested that it would remind you of Free to Be You and Me.
Yes, actually, that's a very good point. It really does. It's got you know, not just in the style of animation, which is very. Very 70s, like Witch's Night Out. It's got that kind of, that very Faith and John Hubley kind of look to it.
Yeah, yeah. This is also the by themes, a husband and wife animation team.
Oh, the Leeches, yes. I think, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Or is it Leech? Rankin Leech, I think Rankin is what it Leech, said.
Yes.
Rankin yes. Leech.
A Rankin Leech is what you pull off of the Rankin Bass that you catch.
That's actually really good. Did you just come up with that right now?
Yes.
That I tip my hat. That was good. But even the themes of this feel very Free to Be You and Me as well. As when we go through it, I think will become evident.
Yes.
But so is there anything else we should say about
Well, let's remind people about Witch's Night Out, because we've been talking like it's a beloved classic, and I don't think it is as much as we think it is.
Well, clearly anyone who's listening to this has probably listened to our, you know, our Witch's Night Out episode, because we got all the
cool people,
super fans.
We got everyone who listens to the podcast to come on. So.
So Witch's Night Out, what do people need to know about it?
Witch's Night Out is a special from 1978, I think, or maybe 79, that features the cast of characters from this quote-unquote series that right now only numbers two specials called Anytown. And the Anytown players are goodly, nicely, rotten and malicious, small and tender, and bazooey. You have all these people whose personalities are very defined by their names. And then you have Bazooey, who is totally wild, just like the name says.
Yes. So Goodly is he's the blue guy with the mustache. He's the mayor, I think, right?
Yeah. It's never really established in either of these two, but, the Rankin Leech headcanon, he's the mayor.
Right. And we've got Nicely, she's kind of a puffy pink thing. She looks like she's got kind of a big old sweater on, as well as
a real cotton candy look to her. Yeah.
Yes. These characters are all kind of, they're all like one color, and their clothes seem to be part of their bodies. It's a very 70s thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think The Simpsons reminded me a little bit of Witch's Night Out when it first started.
I can see that, especially the way Bart's skin and hair kind of blend into each other.
Yeah, and especially in the Tracy Ullman years, where it was really loose and sketchy like this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yep, exactly. We've also got Rotten and Malicious. Rotten, they're mean. They're the bad. They're not like evil. They're just kind of just jerks.
On an earlier podcast, we realized that what they are is grouches.
Yes, exactly. They love gross food and just being grouchy.
Yes, they're mean, but at the same time they mean well. So I mean, the best way to describe them is like, you know how someone's been said, you know, like, he's not the nicest guy in the world. Well, he's not the worst guy in the world either.
Yeah. I mean, I think we get a little more of them in this one, because in Witch's Night Out, they didn't really get much. You know, they were kind of just jerks. And then at the end, Malicious did that thing where she's like, I want to be a fairy for Halloween. And that was kind of our only glimpse of her softer side.
Yeah.
And this one, I think we get a little more of Rotten and Malicious being less rotten and malicious.
Yeah, there's a surprising moment of tenderness with them.
Yeah. So Malicious is she's green, and she changes her outfit between the specials, because in Witch's Night Out, she's got kind of almost like a kind of a green kind of pantsuit time kind of outfit with big old like high-heeled boots.
Yeah, I think she's kind of got that Cruella de Vil thing going on with the big coat.
And since this one takes place in winter, she's wearing like a very jaggedy green sweater in this one.
Whereas in Witch's Night Out, she's, you know, dressed in like bell bottoms and a really tight fitting shirt. And she has, really shows off her hips too. And people watch Witch's Night Out, they're like, why is the mean lady so hot?
Yeah. well, I mean, when isn't the mean lady hot? it's like, oh, give me some Limburger maraschino dip, mommy. We've also, so Bazooie is our last guy, and he's red. His color is red. And he is, he's got, oh, wait, sorry. We forgot Rotten.
Yeah, Rotten. He's basically like kind of a big, bulky, tough guy who wears, well, in Witch's Night Out, I always kind of felt like he was wearing like a tracksuit, but maybe it's just a jacket.
Yeah, yeah. This one, I kind of got that impression too. And this one, I get the impression much more like leather motorcycle jacket type thing.
Yeah, even though his hair is rougher too. He was a little more clean cut in Witch's Night Out.
Right. So finally we have Bazooie, who is, he's red. He's got kind of an afro, like his head is basically like a cartoon sun. Yeah. So presumably he's got like a beard and a big afro or something kind of look.
Sometimes he has a zonker nose, not always.
Yes. In Witch's Night Out, he's got the zonker nose. And this one, he doesn't have a nose. So he underwent some evolution between the two specials. And then there's Small and Tender, who are two children.
They're brother and sister. A boy and a girl.
Right, right.
Which you can tell because unlike the other two male and female couples, they are complementary colors. They are matching colors as opposed to green and purple, pink and blue, orange and yellow.
Right, right. So they are, and I think like, I don't know if they are mentioned as being brother and sister in Witch's Night Out, but they are living together in the same house. So it's kind of strongly implied. Mm-hmm. But I think this one, they actually do mention that they are brother and sister.
Yes. The other thing is, we only ever hear Small say, even mommy and daddy.
Yeah. Yeah. But presumably their parents did not join in the big march in The Gift of Winter.
No, they're some of the ones that stayed behind.
Right. Right. Now, another thing that was very interesting is the voice cast in this.
Yes.
Because
it's very limited, but big names.
Yeah. Gilda Radner, who was also in Witch's Night Out, she's in this one too. And interesting because in Witch's Night Out, she just played the witch. But in The Gift of Winter, she plays, I think she plays a number of characters, actually. She plays Nicely. She plays the Secretary of Cold.
Yeah.
I think she does a few. But even though Nicely returns in Witch's Night Out, she's not voiced by Gilda Radner in that one.
Yeah, what's her name?
I think it's Jean Rankin, isn't it?
No, it's another name that you would know almost immediately. Delia Dietz.
Let's see. What is her name?
What is her name? Damn, the mom from Home Alone.
Well, let me see, which is Nyala. It's like, I should know her name because, like, she's Catherine something.
Catherine O'Hara.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Catherine O'Hara. You know, yeah, like, dibs. Can't believe I didn't remember her name. She's, yeah, so that's another. I guess they were like, look, we can get, like, Catherine O'Hara in this. Like, let's give her a big role, too. So, I mean, that makes sense then. I guess they were like, look, we got two big names. We gotta, like, but no, actually it looks, oh wait, no, I'm sorry. Catherine O'Hara was Malicious, but Nicely was Fiona Reed.
Oh, who's that?
You know, let's see. Fiona Reed. The name sounds real familiar. So let's see what she's been in. She was in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child Toronto show as Minerva McGonagall. She was in Bravest Warriors, actually. Also in My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, Time Traveler's Wife, Puppet to Kill, the TV series, Robo Roach, My Big Fat Greek Wedding 1, and Redwall, the TV series.
She's what we like to call a working actor.
Yeah, so she's definitely been in a lot of stuff, though. None of these are things that I personally have seen. So
I saw the original My Big Fat Greek Wedding. But
I don't know.
I couldn't tell you which character she was.
Yeah.
Probably one of the many moms.
Yeah. She was Harriet Miller. Hmm. I don't know who that character is. So.
I'm guessing somebody who wasn't Greek, judging by the name.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. So she's definitely been around. She's definitely like, you know, working actress, like you said. So she plays Nicely in the sequel, whereas Gilda Radner, who played Nicely in Gift of Winter, is playing the godmother or the witch in Witch's Night Out.
She's also the narrator for this one.
Oh, okay. I forgot. I missed that. So she's also the narrator. So she did a hat trick here.
Yeah. Every voice here has at least four credits. Dan Aykroyd is Goodly and Rotten and the Maple Tree. We'll get to that. Valerie Bromfeld is Tender, the Guard, and the Secretary of Cold. Jerry Selsberg is Small and Bazooey and Winter himself and a spruce tree.
And of course, I think probably the biggest surprise about The Gift of Winter was the presence of Dan Aykroyd.
Freaking Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. He plays Goodly in this.
Yes. And you can tell that whoever's doing Goodly in Witch's Night Out is doing a pretty good Dan Aykroyd impression.
Yeah. So in Witch's Night Out, Goodly was played instead by, let's see, he was played by John Leach.
Yeah.
Who is, I believe, one of the one of Leach and Rankin Leach.
Uh huh.
So. He does a pretty good job in that. I actually, in this one, Dan Aykroyd, I was really surprised because I did not recognize his voice until the very end that I saw it. And then I was like, oh yeah, I can kind of see that. I can kind of hear it now, you know, that was Dan Aykroyd. It's unfortunate we don't know much about the genesis of The Gift of Winter because I would like to know how. I mean, it's such a weird little student filmy type thing. It's like, how did they get all these? Well, I guess in 1974, maybe Dan Aykroyd and Gilda Radner weren't like huge yet.
They were in 1974. Yeah, they weren't quite household names, but I think Saturday Night Live started like in 1976, maybe 75 even. This was 1974 was during that brief time when instead of Saturday Night Live, it was called the National Lampoon Show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, do you think Dan Aykroyd would have been known and Gil Radner would have been known from SCTV? Because I think they were both on that beforehand, weren't they?
I think that was at the same time.
Okay. So, I wonder because this was a Canadian production.
Yeah.
So they got the biggest stars in all Canada to appear in this. Because I believe Dan Aykroyd is Canadian, isn't he?
Yes.
Or am I? Okay.
I couldn't tell you if Gilda Radner was Canadian, though.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I will. Let me look it up. Is Gilda Radner Canadian? Let's take a look. She was. No. She's from Detroit, Michigan. Mm. That's basically Canada, though.
Yeah, she's, you know, she could drive to Canada. That was good enough. And
yeah. And she was in the Second City Comedy Troupe in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
So there was. And that's what SC stands for in SCTV, Second City. So, yeah, she probably had a connection there. And that was probably also where she met, what was her husband's name? Willy Wonka.
Gene Wilder?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know they were married.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Wait a second. So apparently you were correct. Saturday Night Live, or the National Lampoon radio show, starts in 74. 75 is when Saturday Night Live proper gets started. So at this point, like, they in 72 is when Radner joined Second City. Mm. And looks like Dan Aykroyd was there. So at this point, they would have been in Second City.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's, you know, the Leech and Leech and Rankin kind of plucked them from that. Yeah. Like, hey, you want to be on our weird little cartoon? And they're probably, yeah, sure, why not? It's not like we're doing anything else at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to think that these, you know, little tiny, basically community theater productions end up taking over so much of our headspace as far as media goes.
Yeah. Now, especially because when I look up Isabel Jean Rankin, half of the Rankin Leech team, mm-hmm. her filmography is literally just Witch's Night Out and The Gift of Winter. There's nothing else. That she said everything she needed to say with those two things, apparently. But let's look up our man John Leech and see if he's done anything else. Okay. Now, our man John Leech has done a couple other things. He's also been involved in he made a short called Evolu, which is, what does IMDb say about it? Absolutely nothing.
I'm going to make a guess and say that it's probably something that was made for a museum. That always seems to be the case with these things.
Yeah, it's 7 minutes. It's black and white. And yeah, the fact it's called Evolu, probably evolution. It's probably some sort of, yeah, like if you go into if you've been to the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., they have all sorts of little like videos that play on loop by like the Hubleys or Will Vinton. And so it's it's like that sort of thing. He was also an animator on a TV series called Read Along, which I'm not familiar with it either. It's from 75, and according to IMDb, it just says kids and puppets teach grade school reading skills. That is
one of
all the information.
One of probably hundreds of Sesame Street imitators that popped up in its wake.
Yeah. It does say that there's one thing here. There's only information comes from one person who left a review saying, many people have differing opinions about Read Along. I thought it was a really fun show. Puppets are the reason it's so successful. I can relate really well to puppets. Boop, Pretty, Granny, The Explorer, and The Thing all made this show fun. It's a shame, and it really shows that shows like this aren't really recognized for creative aspects. Noreen Young and Bob Drummer doing the puppet work, and the kids were acting along with them. Read Along is the best work that TV Ontario ever did. So another Canadian production, apparently.
Oh. Well, obviously that's not true, because TV Ontario also gave us today's special.
Oh, okay, interesting. So, I guess, is that also from Noreen Young and Bob Drummer?
I don't think so. I just know that, I just remember seeing the TV Ontario logo at the end of every episode.
Oh, okay, yeah. It does seem very Canadian when you think about it. But I think what the takeaway from all this is that Rankin and Leech, their magnum opus or opus C are this Anytown universe that they've created.
Magnum opera, I believe is the.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. So they are. This is the crowning achievement of their life's work in animation, as far as we can tell. I really would like to know how they got like these SCTV people involved, but since I assume that Canadian TV is a lot like English TV, where it's like 10 people doing everything, so they just, you know all know each other. So that's probably what happened. I did think Dan Aykroyd was very interesting in this, because he's playing a kind of against type in some ways.
Yeah, I can't remember when he's played somebody like Goodly before.
Yeah. Like, Dan Aykroyd's thing is, I feel like anytime you see him, he's always playing someone who, in the world of that movie, everyone else is like, oh, that guy's a weirdo, you know? Ray Stantz and Ghostbusters, everyone in there kind of thing. You know, they all, like, this guy, okay, he's a little weird, even though he's surrounded with other people who are kind of weird. Nothing But Trouble, Dragnet. He always plays someone who's kind of on their own frequency. And this one is, I think, Dan Aykroyd playing the most normal person that I've ever seen him play.
This is Dan Aykroyd's criticism of the rest of us. This is Dan Aykroyd putting on a Clark Kent glasses and be like, here's what you normies are like.
This is Dan Aykroyd doing a neurotypical face, you know?
I'm Goodly. I'm totally normal. I'm not carrying a police badge in my wallet.
Yeah, it's... but you know what? It works. He really sells this character. And Goodly is, I don't know. I think Goodly is an interesting character in this because we don't know that he's a politician, but no. He kind of is. They never say it, but
he has the air of a politician, even if you never see him run for office.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess should we just get into the actual Gift of Winter?
Yeah.
And as we talk about it, we'll talk more about Dan Aykroyd's Goodly performance, yes. I'm sure. So,
yeah.
So The Gift of Winter.
Yes, which starts with an actual depiction of the Gift of Winter and children sledding and skiing, building snowmen, catching snowflakes on their tongues. And then Gilda Radner, the narrator, says, can you imagine what winter would be like without snow? And yes, easily.
Yeah, we live it.
I guess but these Canadians could not.
No. It snows like, like 11 months of the year up there.
Yeah.
But apparently there was a time when it did not snow anywhere. There was no snow. It was just winter was dreary and cold, but no snow. And this was a very, very, very long time ago,
yes.
As evidenced by the fact that it takes place in a town that's very clearly modern.
Yes. And don't forget, this is Anytown, USA. So, you know, as far back as, you know, within this century, there was no snow.
Yeah. But I guess we'll say this is an alternate universe,
yes.
where snow was not a thing until fairly recently. Well, you know, there's a lot of things in this that indicate it's not our world, but we'll get to them. So the narrator says that, yeah, it sucks. Winter just sucks. It's a terrible season. And so finally the people of Anytown, USA, not Anytown, Canada.
Yeah,
I guess.
Surprisingly.
They decide that they're going to do something about this. they're going to take steps to make winter better. And Goodly takes charge. And his plan is that they are going to petition the Ministry of Winter to make things better.
So this was a long, long, long time ago, but everything is already tied up in bureaucracy.
Yeah, this was so, again, this is not the plot that I would expect from a children's, you know, Christmas special. This is ostensibly a Christmas special. Christmas is mentioned a few times.
Yeah, but we never see Christmas being celebrated. We only see, you know, snow.
Yeah, like the big drama is that they want to be back from this petition to the Ministry of Winter in time for Christmas. But yeah, otherwise it's a very unusual Christmas special. There's no Rudolph. There's no Santa. There's no presents. It's literally about winter. Yeah. It's about, the weather. But
I don't know if they ever call him that, but I guess you could say it's about Old Man Winter.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't, I don't think they don't call him that, but yeah, you're right. It is Old Man Winter. So, the story of Old Man Winter,
Old Father Boris,
this, This again feels very 70s to me. You know, just this concept that they're going to winter is controlled by, you know, a government agency, the Ministry of Winter, and we are going to go and petition the bureaucrat in charge of winter to change things. And I don't know why. I feel like this is a very 70s thing. First of all, this kind of Phantom Tollbooth-y meta. What do you call this? Labeling of everything. Mm, you know, kind of like in a political cartoon.
Yeah, I was going to say. You know what I mean? Ben Garrison world.
Yeah, yeah. It feels very 70s to me. But also just the idea of like we the people going to petition the government to change things. You know, the idea that like the people can effectively organize for a better world is like, well, that's definitely dates this. but it does feel like that. It's interesting, of course, to see the different ways that the people want to like do this, because Goodley is very much about, look, there's a process. We're all going to go, you know, we're going to go and sign a petition or something and get this done legal, you know, very nice and legal. And Bazooey is much more excited about the idea of getting a crowd together to go and like make a show of numbers, mm-hmm, to Old Man Winter.
A community. You might say he's a communist.
Yes, exactly. You're seeing like Goodley kind of the centrist liberal and Bazooey the direct action communist. And
Rotten and Malicious, the very direct action anarchists.
Yes, because their plan is they're going to bring some dynamite and they're going to blow Old Man Winter to Kingdom Come. which is just like, again, I'm not sure that this was, you know, I said this was a children's special for Halloween. I don't think that's particularly accurate. I don't think this was intended for kids at all. I think this was probably for adults who are, you know, in the know, who can have a good wry chuckle at all these shenanigans.
So is this another one where, you know, sitting down, you had absolutely no idea where it was going?
No, I did not. I kind of figured we'd see an a personification of winter. I kind of thought that would happen. But I thought it would probably be more like I was expecting something more along the lines of Old Man Winter or probably Jack Frost would be, you know, going around doing his thing and being like, oh, I wish I could. And people being like, oh, I hate winter because it's cold. And then probably either doing the thing where he's like, well, I'm going to go away. And then they're all like, oh, no, please come back. You know, please come back because we need you. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I thought. Yeah, I know what you mean.
That is not where this goes.
No. First of all, the idea that like we're gonna go petition the government agency where the personification of winter works is pretty out there to begin with. But I also like the fact that this is a normal thing for them. Like this isn't like, oh, we wish winter would be better, and then they find out that this is the way it works. They know from the beginning, because Goodley immediately says, we're going to go to the Ministry of Winter, which I thought was going to be like, oh, a throwaway joke. Like, oh, he's this, like, because he's a politician, that's the way he thinks things work that way. But he's going to learn that it's not. But then it turns out that is how things work. He is correct. which, again, is also kind of interesting, because the way that Goodley is portrayed in this, I feel like it is a 70s politician, or not a 70s politician, but like how we might have thought of politicians back then. Because if this was more recent, I feel like if you had wanted to make fun of a politician, it'd be like much more cynical.
Yeah,
you know?
It'd probably like, be a lot less. What's the word I'm looking for? It'd be a little more in your face, and he'd be like doing the Nixon V's all over the place.
Yeah. Like the thing about Goodley is he's kind of like blustery and full of himself, but he has good ideas and he's actually an effective leader, you know, which is, again, things that you don't expect from politicians anymore.
But he's also very vulnerable. Did you notice that in both this and Witch's Night Out, there are moments when he absolutely succumbs to despair?
Oh, that's true. That's true. He's a man of the people, you know, and he actually, when it looks like the plan might fail, he is genuinely upset that he has failed the town, you know?
Yeah. And I wonder how much of that is, you know, how much of that is genuine concern for the town and how much of that is his ego saying, I can't let myself fail.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably a testament to Dan Aykroyd's performance in this, that yeah. It really is. You're not really sure the whole way through exactly how much of Goodley's self-absorption is his actual self-absorption and how much is just a front, you know, hiding genuine concern for the people. But again, we're also kind of just like assuming he's a politician.
Yeah.
Like we said, it's never mentioned in the actual text that we're reading today.
Yes.
But he definitely has that feel.
Well,
but his plan.
The thing about Witch's Night Out is the way it ends with everyone revealing their costumes is that turning them into these things is not putting on a costume. It's revealing who they really are. Is that, you know, Goodley, you know, presents himself as a man of the people, but, you know, deep down he's a conqueror and he has to struggle with that. You know, Malicious sort of portray herself as a nasty, mean person, but she's really a fairy princess. She's very delicate and can't show that to anyone.
That's a good point. So that actually also puts some of Goodley's behavior in this into a new light when his true self was revealed at the very end.
Yeah.
But I guess so. They're going to go on this petition. They're going to march to the Ministry of Winter. Small and Tender are not allowed to come with them because it's too difficult to trek for children.
And they don't have any cars Small and Tender or anything.
Right. They're just going to, they walk. They have signs. They have all these signs, right? I think it says like winter, yuck,
yeah,
and stuff
says,
like that.
Hate winter, yuck, yuck, boo, bad, boo winter, blah. We demand the complete and total obliteration of winter and all that stands for. Yuck, winter unfair.
Well, you know.
And yar boo.
See, this is when like, you know,
and
just.
Blah.
Just seeing people take to the streets. It's great. But yeah, so they've got their plan. They're all going to trudge
yeah.
to the Ministry of Winter.
And we get to hear this long parade with shedding people as they lose their nerve and head back to town.
Yeah. But Small and Tender decide that they're also going to follow. So they take a shortcut through the woods.
Yes. And they don't trudge. They steppity step.
Yeah. And they take breaks for peanut butter sandwiches every so often.
Peanut butter sangerch. But boy, do they get sick of peanut butter sangerch.
Yeah. Peanut butter sangria? That sounds great.
I can see sangria flavored peanut butter. I don't know about peanut butter flavored sangria.
Yeah, you just have chunks floating in it. You already have chunks floating in sangria, so why not?
I mean, how different is it from peanut butter and grape jelly?
I mean, it's a good point. Someone should get in on this.
Is there wine jelly? There probably should be.
There's wine jellies.
There's wine
British
gums.
Things.
Yeah.
No, and gums. There you go. Yeah. But anyway, as they're on their way, they get lost in the forest, and that's when they meet the trees.
The spruce and the birch.
Yeah, so these two talking trees that offer them aid. And Dan Aykroyd, I think, plays the spruce or the birch. I can't remember which one he plays.
I forgot one, yes. But you get some... I don't know if these are bad, you know, I don't know if they're caricatures or stereotypes, but these trees have pretty stereotypically gay voices.
Yeah, as soon as they were talking, I was like, these trees, I got the impression that they were a couple.
Yeah.
They're not as like over the top stereotypical flamboyant gay as I would expect from a film of this time period, but it's definitely, there's definitely a vibe. Like, I mean, we both, it sounds like we both picked up on it.
I think it's, I think it comes from the name, from Spruce, because at the time the name Bruce was considered to be like a standard gay name.
Yeah. I also, I thought that too. Also the fact that it sounded like they, it sounded like they were like, I know Spruce is the name of a tree.
Yes.
But the way that Dan Aykroyd says Spruce, it sounds like he's saying Bruce, but lisping it.
Yes.
Which
Spruce.
Kind, you know. Yeah. But, you know, this, it's very, but I don't know. The, this, this couple of gay trees, yeah. I guess.
Is this representation?
I mean, it kind of, I'll say this. It's like, it's
a lot not, more representation than most Christmas specials get.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, if they are supposed to be gay, and I think we can pretty much safely say that, yeah, they're supposed to be gay. It's not like poisonous, you know, it's no. Not like,
no, the trees, you know, are absolutely heroic characters. They save the kids' lives.
Yeah. And I, on the way, cause I think, Spruce is sleeping and Maple, is trying to wake him up. It was kind of charming. Cause like, it's like, oh, they really seem like, you know, an old gay couple who's been together for a very long time. It's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of quaint.
Yes. It's got that, you know, Steven Spielberg's Hook, where Hook and Smee are basically, you know, a couple of fussy old queens, as they put it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it's very, I mean, it's very cute, and they the kind
frog
of,
and toad,
you know,
energy.
Yes, yes, that's a good way to put it. Big frog and toad energy with these trees. And it's also interesting because, like, I don't know much about Dan Aykroyd. I assume he's not gay.
I have
but
no
I don't
idea.
Know. Now that I think about it, I just always, I am leaping to conclusions about Dan Aykroyd because I've never seen him play an out of the closet gay character. Maybe he has, and I'm not familiar with his complete CV. Mm. So, like, hearing him do this one again, it seems like he's playing against type. You know, I don't feel like Dan Aykroyd has ever played a character who's actually interested in sex. To be honest,
oh,
I feel
yeah?
like every Dan
unless
Aykroyd character is
a blowjob from a ghost.
Well, I mean, I don't. He wasn't soliciting that just happened to him.
Yeah, but he was dreaming about it.
Well, no, that actually happened.
Oh, well.
Well, wait.
He fell out of the bed.
Well, I guess it's up to interpretation whether Dan Aykroyd dreamt he was getting a ghost blowjob or an actual ghost came into the firehouse and blew him.
You know, I mean,
I always
if you thought that was an option, you'd probably leave the containment unit open a lot more often than you did.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, I feel like Dan Aykroyd's characters are always big ace energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, that doesn't mean anything because you can be a straight ace. You can be a gay ace. Mm-hmm. You can be all sorts of things, right? I mean, you can be a World War I flying ace. I love when we're doing a thing and then we just derail into something that is like incredibly problematic.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I feel like it's like, is it speculating that like Dan Aykroyd is ace? Is that bad? I don't know. Dan Aykroyd is like, look, no disrespect to our, you know, our hard functioning king, Dan Aykroyd. Love him. But.
The truth comes out. But does Dan Aykroyd is gay?
Well, you know what? I'm just gonna Google Dan Aykroyd sexuality because now I'm curious. Dan Aykroyd sexuality. Let's see. What is Dan Aykroyd? No, I don't want to hear about him recalling the ghost blowjob. What? All this is about the ghost blowjob. I don't care about that. Just okay. Dan Aykroyd. Let me just look up Dan Aykroyd and see what his personal life on Wikipedia says. Does he not have a personal life here? He's got to have a personal life.
Oh, this
Come
is
on.
Interesting. He wanted to produce a film based on the life of Liberace.
Oh, interesting. Was he going to be in it?
Like, I don't know. I think he was just producing it. But this is an interview with Larry King where he says he had a hard time getting people to produce this movie with him.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, I can see that might be a hard sell.
But it did get made behind the candelabra.
Wow. Oh, interesting. Here we go. Let's see. Oh, he was engaged to Carrie Fisher.
Oh, wow. That would have been quite a connection.
He proposed to her on the set of the Blues Brothers.
Oh, that's right.
But apparently, the engagement ended because she reconciled with her former boyfriend, Paul Simon.
Oh, damn.
So instead, he married Donna Dixon, another actress, and they appeared together in the films The Twilight Zone, the movie, Couch Trip, Exit to Eden, Spies Like Us. And they have three daughters.
Oh, okay. So, you know, we can safely say that, you know, even if he is gay, he's happy in this life.
Yes, yeah. So we'll say that Dan Aykroyd, possibly not gay. I mean, you know, possibly. Maybe unlikely. Well, you know what? I mean, we all know that Dan Aykroyd's true love beyond everything else is Crystal Skull Vodka. That is his baby. That's his baby. Crystal Skull Vodka. The thing about it, I mean, I know the skull, like the shape of the bottle, that's pretty exciting. Like a lot of people fixate on that, but really what you need to understand is it's filtered through, Herkimer diamond crystals.
What are those?
They're double terminated quartz crystals discovered within exposed outcrops of dolomite around Herkimer County, New York, in the Mohawk River Valley. They're not actually diamonds, but they're named because their clarity, they are like diamonds. So because the Crystal Skull Vodka is filtered through the Herkimer diamonds, it creates more good, I guess. I'm sorry. I'm not Dan Aykroyd. I don't know what the sales pitch actually is.
Yeah. Crystal Skull Vodka. It tastes like shit, but it's cheap and it'll get you soft.
I mean, that's really, that's the important thing, isn't it?
Actually, I have no idea if it's cheap.
Well, I mean, it's,
if it comes in a crystal skull, it's probably not.
I mean, if it came in an actual crystal skull uncovered from, you know, where are the crystal skulls from?
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, no, they're a real thing, aren't they?
They are?
Yeah, in real life, there's crystal skulls.
Crystal skull vodka?
that's why they were in Indiana Jones. They are, here they are. They're made out of clear or milky white quartz, claimed to be pre-Columbian Mesoamerican artifacts by their alleged finders. However, the claims have been refuted for all of the specimens made available for scientific studies.
Ah, okay. So it's like those guys are like, you know, look at us. We've discovered these pre-Columbian chop suey cookers.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It looks, in fact, that these crystal skulls were all crafted in Germany in the 19th century, most likely in the workshops of the town of Eider-Oberstein, which is renowned for crafting objects made from imported Brazilian quartz.
Crystal skulls.
Yeah. Well, we're learning a lot tonight in The Gift of Winter. but back to The Gift of Winter.
Right.
We are... So the trees... They give Small and Tender shelter for the night, and they tell them in the morning they're going to help them find their way out of the woods.
Yes, which they do with the all the other trees. Unfortunately, Spruce and Birch aren't able to join them. The other trees are just whispering to them, this way, this way. And it's suddenly it turns into a creepypasta.
I mean, it's kind of cool. I was like, oh, it's too bad this isn't a Halloween special because it really does. Yeah, it's definitely a little unnerving hearing all these trees just whispering this way, you know. Also, this special, it really there's a lot of problems are solved by community engagement in this.
That's true. That's kind of the neat thing about it.
Yeah, this is definitely not like, so again, it's not like, I don't know, it's not a film that you, it's not a theme that you see a lot anymore.
No.
In our modern films.
You know, not in the time when we focus on single superheroes saving the day.
Yeah. This is the Gift of Winter is the Meteor Man of Canada is really what it is. But I get maybe in Canada white people organize. Maybe they have communities up there, you know? It's not like here in America. I mean, I wouldn't know. I've never been to Canada.
No, white people organize and then they attack the Capitol.
Do they do that in Canada too?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, you meant here?
Yes.
Yeah. No, you're right. They do, don't they? Yeah. Well, they don't really organize. That was more of a, you know, it was more of a flash mob, I guess.
Yeah. Chaotic.
I mean, yeah, it was just, yeah.
Stochastic terrorism anyway, is the word.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. USA. So Small and Tender eventually, because the trees help them through the woods, they reunite with the main party, who has now dwindled down to just Goodly, Nicely, Bazooey, and Malicious and Rotten.
Yeah, Malicious and Rotten want them to head back home, but Bazooey offers to take care of them since he's good with the children. And so you have like two parties where, you know, one is all warm, you know, you have the two groups of adults are all cool colors, and then the kids are all warm colors.
Do you think the colors mean something?
Probably not.
Like, well, because Bazooey is passionate, so he's red. Mm-hmm. And you know, the color of passion, because Goodly is, he's the voice of logic, so he's got the cool blue color, you know. I got nothing.
Small needs to be kept safe, so he's orange, and Tender is, well, she's not a coward, so I don't know.
Yeah, who knows. Well, anyway, the important thing is they arrive at the Ministry of Winter, and it's like a big, looks kind of like a big penitentiary just kind of built into the wall of the mountain.
Yeah, it's a large building with a large door for tall people, and it seems to be manned by ice trolls.
Yeah, kind of like frost giants or something. Yeah, you know?
Just big kind of gravestone shaped lump people.
Yes, because when they get inside, and it's interesting because it is like this huge edifice, just like a million doors when they get in. So you can tell already, like, okay, bureaucracy. And everything's kind of like, you can see cracks in the walls. Everything is just gray. It does look very, very desolate, like you would expect.
Yeah, it's got that kind of a winter, you know, brutalist, everything that got built in the 40s and 50s kind of look. Kind of crumbling,
yes,
down.
Yeah.
They have guard with a big pegboard of keys.
Yeah, and this was interesting because Goodly is like, can't figure out the guard's gender. he kind of swaps back and forth, sir, ma'am, sir. And I don't know that it's actually ever established.
The guard does have forearms, but that doesn't tell you anything.
I actually just assumed that this was just a guy because it's a guard. That's me being stereotypical. Mm-hmm. But it's actually, the guard is voiced by, I think, Gilda Radner does the guard.
I think so. Yeah. Let me see.
So she's doing she's, oh no, it's not. Am I wrong?
No, it's Valerie Bromfeld, who is also Tender. So yeah.
Oh, so okay. She's got a lot of range.
Voice. Yeah.
Yeah. She's got a lot of range because this is definitely like, very like polar opposite from her Tender, impression or Tender voice. The guard eventually, they go through a little bit of a rigmarole, like, well, you need an appointment to see Winter. Oh, well, we want to make an appointment. You can't make an appointment because Winter doesn't see anyone. That sort of thing where it's like, oh, I get it.
Nobody
gets
to see the wizard. No way, no how.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of thought they were going to do, they're going to do one of those like 12 labors of asterisks, like in the House of Insanity type things where they're just going to be shuffled around from bureaucrat to bureaucrat. They do a little bit of this. They don't,
a little bit.
The main issue though is just that the guard tells them where to go and they can't remember the directions because they're so complicated. Yeah, so they just end up running around like
The guard has this almost little song that rhymes to help you remember how to get to the Secretary of Cold, and they can't remember it because it's too convoluted. But somehow they end up finding their way there anyway.
Yeah, and the Secretary of Cold is another kind of lumpen ice person, but she's got like horn-rimmed glasses like a Far Side lady.
And is wearing, well, I don't know if is wearing high heels or just has feet shaped like high heels.
Oh, that's right. That's right. She doesn't want them around. She does that normal thing like, oh, you can't be in here, woo, sort of thing. But eventually, I think, agrees that they've got to fill out those applications to see Winter. So they fill out some, you know, nonsense applications. Like the census taker bit.
My favorite bit is that Small doesn't know his own parents' names. Like, names of parents, mommy and daddy.
yeah. I also, Goodly is like, can't remember if has he been in the military? Well, he was in the scouts, you know. But then they turn in the papers and we get like kind of a who's on first type a bit. Because the Secretary of Cold gets everyone confused and can't tell them apart, and you know they're like, "Are you Goodly? No, I'm Nicely. Are you sure? No, I'm Nicely." Like that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But eventually, I think the Secretary of Cold just decides she has to go do a thing.
Yeah.
And they're left alone in this control room, which has all these kind of big 70s reel-to-reel computer type things all over the place.
Mm-hmm. And a big shiny red button, just Bazooie's color.
It's like, uh-oh, what's going to happen there?
The jolly candy-like button.
It's like, well, you know, it's like, it's time for Bazooie to do something in this story.
Watch him Bazoo. And he does.
So yeah, he
hits the button.
He bazoos.
He hits the button, and it turns out to be a direct line to Winter. And he does his impression of the Secretary of Cold saying, "We've got some people who want to see you, sir.
Send them in."
Yeah, Old Man Winter is not happy.
Oh no,
he is not happy to have complainers here.
Yeah, we finally get to see him, and he's the biggest ice troll of all. He's just this huge lumpen. He literally looks like a frosted over mountain. And he's sitting in this, I guess, throne room or court or something at the top of this incredibly tall podium. And so Goodly and Nicely go to make their case to him. And while they're making their case, Rotten and Malicious are sneaking their dynamite into this room.
Direct action gets the goods.
Uh-huh. And Winter has absolutely no truck with them. He's like, you know, you have a problem with Winter? The very idea. You should be ashamed to have even come here. Get out.
Yeah. And they're like, because they're all like, oh, can't things change? And he's like, change? But if things change, they'd be different. You know, which is,
that again, seems like that's that. Actually a more famous line from this.
Oh, is that like famous?
No, it should be, is what I'm saying.
Oh, it should be. Yeah. That again feels like kind of, I don't know. It's
a little,
how do you describe that line?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. But they implore him to make Winter nicer is I think what Nicely says. Can't Winter be nicer? And
she's not even asking for it not to be cold.
Yeah, that's true. They're very open-ended about what they mean by nicer.
Yeah, they just want it to be better somehow. You know, if they had, maybe if they had come with a proposal of some kind, he'd be more open to this, but.
Yeah, but no, he's set in his ways and he does not like that. So he basically sends them out, but then Small and Tender and Bazooie wander in. And not even knowing that they're in front of Old Man Winter, they just kind of wander in and they're complaining about how cold it is. And Bazooie's like, I think Small is like, why is Winter so mean? And Bazooie's like, well, maybe he doesn't mean to be. Maybe he's just sad or lonely. And you know, they're all so small and tender, talking like, oh, maybe he doesn't have any friends. Nobody likes him. And Winter, overhearing all this, he's touched in his cold Grinch heart, and he starts to cry, and his tears turn into snowflakes and fall upon everyone.
Yeah, the children in Bazooey, who, you know, weren't even aware that he was there, and they were like, what the heck is this? Did you make this? And, you know, Winter isn't even aware of what he's doing, and the secretary runs up, and he's like, did you do this, sir? No. What did he say? His answer is no. The answer is snow? Wow!
Yeah, so now that's how snow got named and happened for the first time.
So snow is like a s'more.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, old man Winter, he's very, you know, this whole chain of events, it's touched him, I think, seeing how much Small and Tender enjoy playing in the snow.
Yes. And he continues to weep, but this time for happiness, because he's never had anyone appreciate what he does before.
Yeah. And he says, it's good to laugh, it's good to cry, it's good to be me.
Yep.
Or it's good to be free. What is
it? Makes me feel so free.
Makes me feel so free. That's it.
It's ever so good to kind of me.
It's ever so good. You know, like, this is, I gotta say, like, this theme kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, yeah. It wasn't really, like, foreshadowed. I mean, I think that if they'd done a second draft of the script, they probably should have, like, hinted that that was going to be the big takeaway from this whole adventure, is that it is good to be me, or mm-hmm. good to be, I guess. But still, I actually really like this. I kind of found this ending kind of touching. I liked the line that it's good to laugh and it's good to cry. It makes me feel so free. Mm-hmm. And I just like the idea that it's good to feel things.
Yeah.
You know,
and not that, you know, you should avoid being sad, because, you know, if you feel something, you're alive.
Yeah. And I know that, like, we grew up in the 80s. So the idea that, like, oh, feelings are good was like a staple of a lot of animation.
Oh yeah. Before youth. I was a Transformers fan, I was a Care Bears fan. That was absolutely
yeah.
a major part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I was too, though, to be totally honest. I was like, oh, I love Beastly. Beastly's so cool. I wish I was Beastly or Shrieky.
And you got your wish.
I got my wish. Now I fly. Now I go to work on a little helicopter, pedal helicopter, and I work for a wizard with no face. But I mean, what I'm saying is, it was kind of background radiation. If being a kid in the 80s was stuff like this, and, you know, a lot of it I didn't really pay much attention to. Like, you know, it was just in cartoons, and I'm not saying that I would have paid a lot of attention to it in this, but, like, I feel like this hit in a way that was very, I don't know, like, this one, maybe it's also because, like, I'm older now, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm much more, when you're a kid, you know, feelings are very overwhelming, and you don't need a TV show to tell you
it's
that
true.
You have them, you know?
Kids, like, everything feel so hard that, you know, it's only as a grown-up that you realize just how much you've repressed them. You know, it's
exactly
when you're a kid, is like, you know, somebody took you didn't get a fortune cookie, and you just howl because you never know if there's ever going to be another one again. That's a whole experience you missed out on.
Yeah. Like, kids are extremely extra, you know, and it's easy when you get older to forget that, you know, because, like, yeah, we do repress a lot of that. Things don't hit as hard. You're used to disappointments in life. And also, like, the good times too, like, you're used to them. So your reactions are often more muted to things. And that's not, like, a bad thing. It's just part of growing up. You have to learn to live in this world. And part of that is learning to control your emotions. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it is very freeing to sometimes just experience, you know, the pure visceral joy or even sorrow of something. It can be very freeing, like it was for Old Man Winter here. So his little, like, I think part of it is they put so much detail into his face. He's got these crags and wrinkles so that when he smiles, it really does kind of light up almost, you know? He's got because he has this very sour look that just kind of morphs into like laugh lines when he starts smiling.
Like his face was built to smile and he never did it before.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and then when he's leading them all out, he's almost like dancing, you know? Yeah.
Something else happened.
Oh, that's right. Because there was that dynamite.
Yeah.
Nicely
and Goodly were not aware that Rotten and Malicious had brought this dynamite, and then they're outside and they're laughing about what they did, and they're like, hey, where are Pazooie and Small and Tedder? Oh my god, the kids, they're still in there! And these mean people, quote-unquote mean, absolutely drop all their concerns to try and break down this door and get in and save the kids.
Yeah, there's layers to Rotten and Malicious.
Yeah.
You know?
And when they finally get inside, only to find that the whole place is covered in snow, a word that has just been invented. They dig through the snow and find that it's put out the fuse to their dynamite. And the two of them look at each other for a moment. They have this really intense hug. And that really hit me there was, you know, how much, you know, no matter how prickly you are on the outside, there is a part of you that needs someone else. You know, I'm glad Rotten and Malicious have each other.
Yeah. I feel like this, like, again, I don't want to slag Witch's Night Out or say it's like there's anything, because Witch's Night Out is also, I think, very good and has a lot there. But I feel like it just, this one feels a lot more raw in some ways, good and bad. You know, it's like, it's definitely a lot more, it's a lot sketchier. It's obviously not as developed. They didn't have as much time or money or whatever, but the emotions are a little more on the sleeve in this one.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like Witch's Night Out, they were a little more subtle.
Yeah. They were like, stuff. Maybe it's not that good to laugh or cry. It's better to
laugh. Witch's Night Out, like, you know, definitely towards the end, especially when people are revealed as their real selves, like, obviously there's, like, layers going on there as well, but I think it's a little, there's a little more subtlety to it, it takes a little more thought to parse that out. In this one, it's like, oh, the message is right there, you get it, we're telling it to you, you know it, and, you know, a lot of specials, a lot of things, I would count that as a negative thing if I would be, oh, that's being didactic. That's, you know, come on, don't preach to me. This one, it works, though. I mean, it's sometimes using a sledgehammer, I think, is the right choice. And I really like the way it worked here. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes subtlety is not necessary.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you gotta make throw subtlety out and make a Matrix Revolutions, you know, you just got to tell people what the point is. So then they realize it's Christmas Eve. And so, they got to get back home. And I think doesn't Winter take them somehow?
Yeah, Winter takes them by demonstrating how now you can easily slide home. They basically sled home on their butts.
They've invented sledding.
And skiing, yeah. And I think they all do something different. The kids go on their feet and nicely just rolls like a snowball.
Yeah. But they all get there in the end.
Yep, and this journey that took like 4 peanut butter sandwiches before, it happens in no time. And
yeah.
And everyone in town gathers to welcome them and join in the joy of having snow for winter. And we see Old Man Winter wave to them from his mountain before lumbering away. And roll credits.
Yep. So that was The Gift of Winter.
Do you think it was a gift?
Yeah, I think it was. Now we got...
Surprised and delighted that you liked this so much.
Yeah. I was not expecting much out of this, but I think this is, I can understand why Rankin Leach didn't do a lot of animation after these two Anytown specials. I mean, maybe it was they didn't have the opportunities, maybe, but maybe they said everything they wanted to say with these two. Because
you want to know the real reason? Simple.
Oh, what is the real reason?
They got divorced.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
However, well, the two of them are now not together again, not as a couple, but as a partnership, and they are trying to get more of these specials made. They actually have plans for four more and a remake of The Gift of Winter.
Okay, well, I would be very interested to see that become a reality. Yeah, I also think it's...
I've got it up right here. Witch's Night Out. Yes. From Uncle Porkchop Productions, we have the to-be-made specials, Pass the Thanks, Please, Return of the Witch, a sequel to Witch's Night Out, Valentasia, which is six short subjects about Valentine's Day, Pursuit of Happiness, which is a New Year's story, and The Gift of Winter, recreated with modern technology, presumably.
Wow. Well, I really want to know what they're going to do with these, because as we've seen from these two specials, we have an extremely unorthodox Christmas special and an extremely unorthodox Halloween special. I don't think I've ever seen a New Year's special.
Yeah. Well, at all. Yeah, we did. We saw a New Year's special and then we lost the whole damn thing.
Did we? What did we do? Oh, that was right. There was that one. Guess what?
Shiny New Year. God damn it.
There was one. Okay. So there was a New Year special. It's more unusual.
Yeah.
It's unusual. In fact, I think in that lost New Year special, didn't we even mention that this was the only New Year special ever?
As far as I can tell.
Well, maybe not now. Maybe there's going to be another one. Yeah. We're living in a world, we're living in a time where like everything's being remade. They're bringing back Ghostbusters. They're bringing back the Dark Crystal. Everything from like those old times is coming back again. And I guess Witch's Night Out is going to be the next on that list. So, I'm glad that at least the original people are involved, since they clearly have a real love for this setting and these characters.
Yep. Let me tell you the plot here. At the end of each year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's hear it. Oh, this is the New Year special?
Yes. At the end of each year, the folks of Anytown celebrate by running the New Year's Eve marathon, bringing in the new year in hopes of a fresh start to their lives. Meanwhile, in another dimension in time, another race is being ran by Father Time that also happens every year. Mr. Death is hot on his trail, but Father Time's luck is about to change. By jumping the track in a leap year and heading into our world, he feels he has a chance to live life by his terms and help a few townsfolk along the way. This results in a catastrophic jolt in the universe, creating chaos with time lapses and an angry Mr. Death on a search for Father Time that may end the balance of the natural way of things forever.
Wow, okay.
I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, okay. Talk about a lot of layers. I guess because I was like, oh, you know, it's like we learned that feeling is good. Now we're going to learn about dealing with mortality.
And here's Return of the Witch. Halloween in any town is celebrated by people being magically turned into anything they want to be for just one night by Witch Winifred. All will change as a mysterious stranger pays a visit and turns things upside down. Not only does Winifred's legacy go away, but the townspeople's souls disappear in the process, as our new villain's agenda is to possess Winifred's magic powers. It's up to Winifred and her loyal friends to reverse this as they find out the true identity of the culprit.
Oh my god, I really hope that they get to make these.
Yeah! God, when are they going to have an Indiegogo? Jeez.
Yeah, Leah, I need to... I will donate to this. If they do a Kickstarter and they don't make the money, that'd be heartbreaking, especially because it's like, oh, I'm sorry, you're going to too busy donating to cans without labels. Instead, you do give to this. This is good.
I didn't donate to cans without labels, and I was a fan at the time. I knew it was going nowhere.
Well, yeah, but someone must have given him money. But like, no, this is like, this rules. Like, okay, they've really got some incredible... Well, you know, they've been thinking about this for 40 years, so
Yeah, they've got four new specials, one for each decade.
Wow. Okay. So, what would be keeping them? Because if they're doing, these are like specials are 20 minutes each. And I mean, the tools for making animation are much more available to the general public these days. Yeah. So you can do animation on a much smaller budget than you used to with fewer hands. So, I feel like there's probably not a lot of barriers to actually getting these done. I really hope, at least. So, but I guess we'll see. Rankin, Leech. Hopefully, if you guys are listening, please make these specials.
Yeah, we're rooting for you. We're excited for it.
Yeah, you've got our you already got our money. If you're when you do your Indiegogo or whatever you do.
We want to see these characters. We love these characters. We love both the specials, and we are excited to see more of them. And we are especially excited to see them, you know, given some real dignity and not like the terrible VHS covers that we grew up with. Have you seen these, Mike?
I have not. Oh, you mean the ones that like that's not Bazooie. What is that?
It looks they were trying to make it look like the Grinch or something. In this VHS cover, Bazooie is all white and he's wearing a yellow turtleneck and has green pants, and Small is dressed in pink and Tender is dressed in green.
This looks terrible. Oh, no wonder it didn't catch on. If people saw this cover, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, this looks like shit. This looks like hot garbage." Not even Gilda Radner and Dan Aykroyd's names on it can like save this.
No.
I love that they call it a brilliant Christmas classic, though. It's like, oh, okay. Nobody's seen it.
Thankfully, this is the version that I saw at the video store. This is the Family Home Entertainment release.
And okay, well,
that looks a lot
thank
better.
You, FHE. You can always FHE coming through in the clutch.
Thank you, Fishhead
that actually looks like it. Yeah, it's like, that actually looks like them. That's them. Good on them. Man, yeah, it's like, you know, you see that FHE logo, you know, you're in for some quality.
You know, okay.
You see this little,
but here is the one that I saw. The one that I found at the dollar store.
Oh, right, my let's God. See this one.
Oh, God. Bazooie looks like fucking Gossamer.
Yeah, I was gonna say. So in this one, it's The Gift of Winter done in like, it looks like Comic Sans. You've got okay, so Small and Tender look like what South is going Park on here? What is happening?
Small's wearing glasses.
Yeah.
Tender is Old as Man short Winter. As him.
Yeah. Old Man Winter looming behind them has the face of Powdered Toast Man from Ren and Stimpy. Does. And Bazooie is just like lurching out of the background.
Winter.
He looks like Animal from the Muppets. I don't know what's going on here. Oh boy. I'm gonna say though, this is still not as bad as that one with the white Bazooie.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
They want so badly to make these give these characters different colored outfits, and you know it just doesn't represent the story that way.
Well, oh, no,
here's
no.
one more that I'd never seen before.
Let's see this. Okay, so clearly the person who illustrated this saw the previous one with the Gossamer Bazooie and the glasses wearing Small.
Yeah.
Because they just redrew those characters. Tender is looking even less like herself. She looks like, I don't know what she looks like if...
They look like characters from The Critic now.
Yeah, they kind of do. I was thinking if you decided to redraw Dora the Explorer as Jennifer Aniston, that's kind of what you would get here. That's Oh, this is terrible. It's awful. Oh, I hate this. Wow. Oh, these are all awful interpretations. Once again, FHE only accept no imitations. FHE. Are they even still around?
No, nowadays? I think they got absorbed. I think they're part of Cookie Jar now.
Oh man, let me tell you. When we were kids, I mean, that FHE logo, you know, with the little crayons making the FHE. Yeah, like it's like that was like seeing the Paramount logo before. No, the TriStars logo. You know that horse with the wings? You know, you were in for some good shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's the good stuff. It's like, oh man, FHE, because you're gonna get like, I don't know, everything was FHE back then.
Oh yeah.
Every cartoon. Transformers, Demo? Care Bears, yeah. G.I. Joe, everything was FHE. You know, it was the best of Buzz Dixon distributor, you know, when you think about it. Oh my god, who are those two?
I'm guessing it's Rotten and Malicious.
Oh my god. Also, Old Man Winter is now a volcano.
Yeah, I'm guessing that the person who did this one looked at the cover for the last one and never at the actual thing.
This is a travesty. This is terrible. I'm really just, oh my god.
This is like, what do you call that? The picture telephone? It's like eat poop, you cat.
Oh yeah, it's what, Exquisite Corpse?
Yeah, or what do they call the one that kids are playing online now? Like Glaucho or something?
Oh, I haven't heard of that one. Oh, yeah, I'm not hipping with it. So, man, this is dire. This is just bad. Oh my god. But imagine being the kid who got this and then you watch the special and it's just like, what?
What were they thinking?
Yeah. God. Oh my god.
Rotten looks like Cartman.
Yeah, he really does. And he looks like he's like a little jolly elf or something. It's like, what are you doing?
The witch turned him into a saint, just like he always wanted.
Oh man. Awful. Bad. Just terrible. This is unacceptable. I they're doing Rotten and Malicious dirty here.
Yeah. They deserve better than this. And they're Rotten and Malicious.
Yeah. Well, I guess anything else we should say about The Gift of Winter before we winterize out of here?
Winterize, yes.
Winterize, well, yeah.
All I can say is that, you know, hey, Winter, hey, why don't you have one of your crying jags over on our mountains for a while? We could really use it.